Thanks, Clint, and thank you, Jared, for that summary of the research paper. I'd just like to start firstly by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we meet today, the Jagera and Turrbal people, and pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging. And furthermore, I was really glad to hear, Clint, you acknowledge the Uluru Statement at the heart. I too would like to acknowledge that statement. And the desire to see recognition of that statement in our capital, an action on constitutional recognition so that we can truly advance Australia. Right, so let me start with a story. A story of the Collera family who now live in Brisbane. Imagine this, a family with two children, mum's a nurse and dad's an engineer. They have a pretty good life until it's turned upside down as a result of civil unrest. For their own safety, they need to leave their home country, a place they belong, a place they grew up in, and where their family connections are grounded. They look to other countries, and Australia seems to be stable, safe, and can provide a good quality of life and opportunities that they need. It also has a skilled migration program, and their professions are identified as in need. They spend the next year learning language and undertaking application processes, and etc. I won't go into what those processes are because, as Jared said, they're very complicated. They land in Australia with no contact, no identified assistance to help them navigate the challenges of settling in their family. With no luck finding employment, after a few months, they discover a program that assists in skills assessment. This results in the news that they would need to undertake additional training to have their skills recognised. In the meantime, the father needs to work, so he accepts the role as a warehouse manager, and mum stays home with the children to help them settle. Their living standard drops significantly, and they're finding it difficult to integrate and feel accepted in Australia. They make the bold choice to invest the only remaining savings they have in upskilling themselves based on the advice that they've received. After 12 months of retraining, they discover that accreditation will need to be provided by a third party and that the advice they received was incorrect. They're frustrated by not being able to use their qualification and at the inability to support their family. You would know people that have had this experience. Maybe the taxi driver who brought you here today, or maybe the cleaner that you passed in the hall at work, or maybe the person who made you coffee this morning. Who knows, they could be more skilled than you. This story should have been a positive one. You would have thought that it could have been. But it was not, and it's an indictment on us that we do not support this family in the way that is inclusive, but also that we do not leverage their skills to support growth in our economy. So these are stories that we heard throughout the research that we undertook as part of this project. These people have lost their culture, their families, their livelihood, and then they are left in Australia to find their own way. I think we can do better, and we must do better. So the research we undertook was to examine the impact that under-recognition of skills had on migrants and refugees from an economic and social perspective, through data analysis, economic modelling and primary research. This report has got some fantastic attention, and that is why the Queensland Government commissioned the report. It's been presented to the federal government, and has also drawn much attention from the other states. The report is the first of its type, and today I want to focus on three key elements that we found through this report. That there is an economic opportunity to recognising the skills of migrants, that under-recognition of skills does have a social impact, and that in fact there is something we can actually do about it to change these trajectories for people. So this is the map of 80,000 migrants and refugees over a 10-year period through their trajectory to get skill recognition and their workplace outcomes. And yes, it looks complicated, and that's the point. And there are many issues with this story. Issues of people giving up on recognition due to the complex nature of the process. Even worse, not giving up on the process, but still unable to find work. And for those who experience purely just discrimination in the workforce. In the end, whatever pathway people follow, 50% of those end up not using their skills in the workforce. So this means that 40,000 people over the last 10 years have not been utilised to their maximum capacity. This is a massive loss to our economy, but also to our creativity, to our diversity, and to our cultural tapestry. So who are these migrants who are not having their skills recognised? Well, they're more likely to be female, of productive working age, so between the ages of 25 and 34, proficient in English, and with a qualification in management and commerce. It is a very strange scenario indeed that we are wasting this talent. So we undertook some research to identify the key areas of costs that can be attributed to the under-recognition of skills, and those are listed here. And there's just a few of those that I'd like to highlight to you today. So the Department of Immigration undertook a study examining the earnings as a measure of individual productivity comparing migrants and non-migrants. They found that on average, migrants are more productive than non-migrants, and at a population level, they found that migrants account for 0.17 percentage point annual labour productivity growth between the years of 2006 and 2011. And that this growth was attributable to their skills and qualification rather than their time spent in the workforce. Furthermore, migrants also increase innovation, promoting job creation and increasing productivity. And in the United States, migrants account for 24% of patents, which is twice their share of the population. Analysis from Germany and the Netherlands shows that increased cultural diversity enhances productivity at the firm level. So in summary, we found a number of economic and social costs that we identified in this project, but not all of them we were able to quantify as part of our work. And therefore, our estimate of the economic impact is one that should be considered as conservative. We found that up to 60% of migrants who are not currently using their skills had a skill set that was listed as in need in Queensland. These skill shortages are an impediment to our growth. What a strange scenario to have people who have chosen to come to Queensland, want to work, but yet not use their skills to improve our society and grow our state. If we were to turn this around, that is worth $250 million over 10 years to the state. And as I said, that's only really part of the overall story. To better understand the social impacts, we fielded an online survey and received up to 700 responses from migrants and refugees across Queensland. This included 20 questions that asked them about the impact that their job status had on four areas: job satisfaction, their family, health, and feelings of belonging in Australia. As expected, the most obvious relationship that we found was between job dissatisfaction and job status. Migrants who were fully utilising their skills reported job dissatisfaction much less frequency than migrants who were skill underutilised. A relationship that was in the same direction, but smaller in magnitude, was seen for family impacts and health indices as well. These results were in keeping the literature that identified the impacts of inadequate employment and underemployment on health and family. We also heard many stories of people from across Queensland, and some of those are reflected here. and also in the report. And it was indeed a sobering experience to hear of the impact of skill under recognition on those people. I think importantly, and as Jared had outlined, we had some similar recommendations in terms of the things that we can do to address this issue in our state and also in Australia. So there are things that we can do to fix it. We need to have more transparency around the process for skill recognition. We need to provide people better navigation when they enter Australia. And we need to have localised supports and networks so that people can get early experience in the job market. So Canada has actually taken action on this. So after identifying similar issues through a report similar to the one that we've undertaken, Ontario took action to implement the Office of the Fairness Commissioner to oversee the processes implemented for skill recognition. If that family I mentioned at the beginning had chosen Canada over Australia, their outcomes would have been much different. And if I was a migrant and I had a choice between Canada and Australia, I know where I would choose to go. There is really now clear evidence around both the economic and humanitarian imperative to addressing this issue. But it's not really all up to government. It's up to all of us as business owners, as employers, and as citizens to make sure we act on this issue. There were 40,000 people of wasted talent over that 10-year period. Do we really want to continue to lose that talent? Would we let assets of that value go to waste in our economy? I would not think so. It's within our capacity to address this issue, as CEDA have outlined in their work, and our work and the work of others, and seize the opportunity to successfully support migrants to grow our economy. And maybe next time you're in a cab, you might just ask the cabbie about their story. Maybe they're one of that 40,000. It really does make a big. Thank you.